The moment Lydia Denworth realized her son Alex couldn't hear her whispered, "I love you," at bedtime marked the beginning of an extraordinary journey. Affecting 2 to 3 in 1,000 newborns, hearing loss thrust her family into a world divided by fierce ideological battles. On one side stood medical professionals, viewing deafness as a condition to treat. On the other, a proud deaf culture, rejecting the notion that deafness needed fixing. This division shapes everything from terminology to educational approaches, with profound implications for families navigating this unfamiliar terrain. What does it mean when the songs you sing to your child disappear into silence? How do you make life-altering decisions about communication methods, educational approaches, and medical interventions without fully understanding what it means to be deaf? For the 95% of deaf children born to hearing parents, these abstract debates become intensely personal, shaping not just language acquisition, but fundamental aspects of identity and belonging. Our ears perform engineering feats that would impress NASA scientists. Sound waves enter the ear canal, strike the eardrum, and travel through 3 tiny bones to the cochlea. The basilar membrane analyzes frequencies while the organ of Corti converts vibrations to electrical signals. This system processes an incredible range, from whispers to jet engines, across nearly 10 octaves. For children like Alex, damaged hearing machinery makes conversation partially audible while whispers remain inaudible. Language acquisition builds on this sound perception foundation. Across thousands of languages, babies follow similar developmental patterns, babbling at 6 months, first words around 12 months, combining words by 18 months. This universal pattern suggests an innate capacity for language that requires exposure. Children of talkative parents hear 48 million words by age 4 compared to just 13 million in quieter homes, affecting vocabulary and IQ. For deaf children, each month without language input represents lost developmental opportunities. For centuries, deaf people lived in profound isolation. Aristotle linked cognition to voice, while Helen Keller noted that blindness separates you from things, but deafness separates you from people. The transformation began in 1760s Paris, when Abbé Charles-Michel de la Paix discovered deaf sisters communicating through gestures and established the first school for deaf children. A divide between manual and oral approaches has persisted throughout history. American deaf education began when Thomas Gallaudet witnessed Alice Cogswell's isolation and established the American Asylum in 1817, creating American Sign Language by blending French and local deaf signs. Alexander Graham Bell, whose mother was deaf, advocated for oral education over signing. The 1880 Milan Conference marked a pivotal moment when educators banned signing in schools, declaring the incontestable superiority of speech over signs. This decision devastated generations of deaf children who struggled academically without access to language, forcing them to learn through a method that denied their natural way of understanding the world. The quest to restore hearing through electricity began centuries ago when Alessandro Volta inserted metal rods into his ears, creating a crackling with shocks. Modern cochlear implant development started in the 1950s when Dr. William House discovered electrical stimulation of the auditory nerve might enable hearing in deaf patients, despite scientific criticism. In Australia, Graham Clark, motivated by his deaf father's struggles, made a breakthrough during a beach vacation. He realized materials stiff at one end and flexible at the other could navigate the cochlea spiral, like grasses pushed through seashells. His team developed a multi-channel bionic ear, stimulating different cochlear regions with different frequencies. When the FDA approved implants for children as young as 2 in 1990, controversy erupted as the deaf community viewed the technology as a threat to their culture. For families like Denworth, however, these advances represented hope. After reviewing videos showing implanted children's progress, Alex's parents shifted from preserving his remaining hearing to hoping he would qualify for the procedure. The urgency of early intervention for deaf children stems from our understanding of brain development. A baby's brain has most needed neurons, but lacks connections between them. These connections form through sensory experiences, with frequently used pathways strengthening while unused ones are pruned away. Neuroscientist Helen Neville explains, experience is like a sculptor who begins with more clay than he needs, simultaneously building and eliminating circuits for efficiency. Language acquisition occurs within critical periods. Phonology, our ability to recognize speech sounds, has a window that closes around age 7. By 13 months, word recognition activates both brain hemispheres, but by 20 months, this activity becomes left hemisphere specialized. Between ages 3 and 5, children master grammatical structures. For deaf children receiving cochlear implants, this plasticity explains both the urgency and outcomes. When Alex's implant was activated, results came quickly. The next day, he pronounced cake with the high-frequency k sound he'd never spoken before. Research shows children implanted in their first 2 years achieved 80% speech intelligibility by age 8, while those implanted after age 3 struggled more. The brain is like a garden. Plant language seeds early, and they'll grow strong roots before the soil hardens. Despite remarkable advances in hearing technology, significant challenges remain for cochlear implant users. Reading presents difficulties because literacy development builds on phonological awareness that deaf children traditionally lacked. Music represents another frontier, often sounding distorted to recipients, like marbles rolling around in a dryer. Perhaps the greatest challenge is hearing in noisy environments, where implants can't match normal hearing. Nevertheless, outcomes for deaf children have improved dramatically. And Gears' studies found their performance far exceeds expectations for children in previous generations. However, challenges persist. Speech recognition deteriorates in noisy classrooms, IQ gaps remain between deaf and hearing children, and only 38% approach hearing peers in writing skills. This raises important questions about measuring success. Is it functioning in the hearing world, academic achievement, or happiness and belonging? For deaf children navigating hearing and deaf worlds, identity questions grow increasingly complex. Alex's family pursued American Sign Language as a second language, recognizing its cultural importance when cochlear implants weren't accessible. Their ASL tutor, Ronnie, served as both language instructor and cultural ambassador. Research by cognitive psychologist Ellen Bialystok shows bilingual children develop superior executive function skills, including enhanced attention control and problem-solving abilities, despite initially smaller vocabularies in each language. At Gallaudet University, attitudes toward cochlear implants have evolved from skepticism to acceptance, with about 10% of undergraduates now using them. When considering a move to Hong Kong, 6-year-old Alex displayed remarkable resilience about learning Mandarin. Neuroscientist Anu Sharma's EEG measurements confirmed Alex's auditory cortex showed responses indistinguishable from a hearing child. His brain had successfully adapted to his devices. The focus has shifted from eliminating differences to building meaningful bridges between worlds. As ASL teacher Janice Cole expressed, "Walk beside me," capturing the essence of this journey. The most powerful lesson is that there are many ways to communicate and belong, not choosing between worlds of sound and silence, but honoring both to create a life of connection.